top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
Hey, Jim, can you cash this check for me? I signed it.
Hey, what's this?
You're not gonna believe this, but that's an income tax refund. I found it in the mailbox of the old place.
You mean you worked last year?
6 months in a toy factory. You don't know how men suffer for children.
Hey, Henry, you gonna buy one or be one?
Hey, I'm gonna be one. Give her a beer.
Yes, sir.
Shot of bark whiskey, please.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 277, Barfly, presented by Francis Ford Coppola and distributed by our friends at Canon.
Distributed by the wonderful Menachem Golan and Yoren Globus from Canon Films. And this is the thing about Canon Films. I mean, when we think Canon, obviously we're going to think of you're missing in action films,
American Ninja
films, your American Ninjas, all those, your break-ins, your
all the Chuck Norris vehicles, all that. Yeah, this.
But the reality is that Canon did produce and distribute certain films of some importance, certain as you would say art films. They worked with artists as diverse as Norman Mailer. They did a cinematic adaptation of Tough Guys Don't Dance, starring Ryan O'Neill, which is now known as basically a meme. It was really, really ridiculous. They distributed, I believe, Neil Jordan's Lair of the...
Lair of the White Witch?
No. Company of Wolves. Okay. That was a very unique art film from Canon. And they produce or help produce or distribute Barfly, and this again, Barbet Schroeder. I mean, this is not a typical Michael Winner Death Wish film. This is Barbet Schroeder directing Mickey Rourke, Faye Dunaway, and one of these doesn't fit with the others, Frank Stallone in Barfly.
And who would have thought you'd look to Canon Films for gritty realism of all things? That's in fact what they're absolutely resolutely not known for, with all the movies you mentioned there. So this is as realistic as you could, this studio has ever been, right?
Well, I don't know about, okay, before we get into Barfly, and we're going to get into it, and we're going to talk a little bit about this movie and why, discussing it and maybe give a caveat or two, I will say one thing. A couple of weeks ago, I watched a film for the very first time. I guess you would say this is the movie that made Canon, because it was the first film they distributed here in North America, and it was called The Last American Virgin. And this was a remake of a film that the brothers produced with the same director, I believe, in Israel, their native Israel. The film was called Lemon Popsicle. When they remade it for the North American market, they called it The Last American Virgin. And this was in the early 80s, at a time when the sex comedy, the sexploitation film a la Porky's, and, you know, the coming-of-age film a la Fast Times at Ridgemont High was running rampant in the cinemas. And this film started off like one of those films. But, like, I actually wanted to text you and say, watch this movie and tell me what you think about it. Not even for the podcast. I just wanted your opinion because it affected me. It really affected me. First of all, it had a kick-ass soundtrack, which I don't know how they managed to afford that soundtrack. It must have been a lot cheaper to get licensing rights back in the day. Every song on the soundtrack was a smash hit in the early 80s. But the way it ended was so atypical of that subgenre and so much more mature, if I can actually say it, and realistic and gritty, to use a word that you know used not long ago, an adjective, gritty. that I was, because immediately after Last American Virgin, they're fucking making the apple, and that's about as far from, you know, gritty and, you know.
Dude, is it Lerman? Is it Boaz Lerman?
Lerman, yeah. But,
okay.
Baz or Boaz? Because Baz Lerman, Boaz Yakim.
Ah, damn. Lousy memory. Maybe it's because we're into our cups, right?
Appropriate for Barfly.
It is, and it's funny that you mentioned art house. How artful can you be depicting, however artistic and talented an individual may be, his descent into just pure self-abuse like this one? I mean, it's artistic in a way, insofar as he's a wannabe aspiring poet / novelist of Skid Row, obviously based on Charles Bukowski.
Okay, so this is the character of Henry Janoski, yeah, played by Mickey Rourke. Mm-hmm. And, of course, very, very, would you say loosely based or more faithfully based on?
Well, it depends on who you ask. But, I mean, after watching Born Into This, which is a fabulous 2003 documentary that I saw in the theater based on the life of the German-American author of, you know, The Captain Is Out to Lunch, The Sailors Have Taken Over the Ship, Women, Barfly, the screenplay, mm-hmm, Ham on Rye, so many books, and like they're all pretty much the same. First person, guy with a booze problem, darkly sardonic, funny, grim, and vaguely misogynistic. That's really the entire.
I would say vaguely. I would say overtly in many a way. When it comes
sometimes,
to
yeah, and that's you can't. It seems to be realistically depicted here, although the extent to which one can really write under the influence, I've never really bought, because it was a conceit of Hunter S. Thompson being able to, and as a journalist, I could say, there's no way in hell I'd be able to meet my deadlines under that state. So I think a lot of it is exaggerated. Now, I have not seen the Matt Dillon, Charles Bukowski adaptation. Have you seen that? I forget even what it's called.
Not in my head, no, I have not. Yeah,
yeah, so this one is, again, surrounding this bar brawler degenerate who lives in this one bedroom just with smoke stains on the walls. It is a flop house. It's a rooming house is what you call them here. I don't know the term you use in the States, but this guy's living, I don't really know how he lives, because at one point he goes into an employment counselor. And one of the lines from the movie is that anyone can get a job. It takes a real man to make it without having one, which is quite funny. So I don't
which
know
is
exactly
kind of ironic
how,
because Bukowski had a job throughout his entire life. He was he worked in a mailroom, didn't he?
He did. Thanks for giving me the title of one of his books, Post Office. Mm. There you go.
He was the post office. That's right.
He was a mail sorter. Yes, so indeed. I'm not sure if he was a delivery guy out on foot and.
he was the actual sorter, within an office. And
like sliding a letter into a slot based on postal code, which sounds just absolutely awful as far as work.
If I sound a little bit, or if I'm not chiming in as much when it comes to the details of this film, there's a reason for that. So we should probably just explain why.
Well, we got our wires crossed, and we thought we were doing a certain film.
Yeah, you've been wanting to do Barfly for time immemorial,
mm-hmm,
and we agreed upon doing it, but then when we were texting back and forth as to what movies we were going to do for, you know, upcoming episodes, we had a little misunderstanding, and I thought you were referring to one film, which I'm not going to name because it's going to be coming up in a future episode.
Yeah.
But you're referring to Barfly, and Barfly is a film that I've only seen one time. It's not. I don't even think it's available on. I don't think it ever came out on DVD, because I remember renting it on VHS at a time when there's only one store I knew of that rented VHS movies, and having like go into the storage room and dust and dig out my old VCR. I've only seen it that one time. So I mean, I remember certain things. I remember Frank Stallone's character. I remember some certain lines. To my friends.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think it was mostly you, would torment your ex-wife with lines from this very film. And it was brought to my attention through our mutual friend Jonas, who guested with us on the Incredible, Most Likely to Die podcast. Incredible insofar as it's one of the worst horror films I think either of us had ever seen, guaranteed, in the last 10 years. But he brought this to my attention at a fairly young age, and Although I don't want to say I moved on from Bukowski, but I binge read a whole bunch of his stuff as I did Stephen King, and then let a bunch of time pass. And I would love to revisit both of the said authors because they have a lot going for them in their own different ways.
I have a theory about you, my friend.
About me?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel that there was a time in your life when you would have liked nothing more than to be the modern day incarnation of Charles Bukowski.
Yeah, fair point. Because I owe a book deal to mild alcoholism. Really.
Well, I was going to say, I think in many ways you romanticize that lifestyle that Bukowski led.
Yeah, it's true. Because the only reason I was able to secure an agent and secure a book deal with a major publisher is because I was going to this bar repeatedly. I would say three nights a week. And happened to run into a woman. It's like almost a Bukowski-esque story. Like, yeah. I ran into a woman, and she offered to represent me as an agent, even though she wasn't an agent. She made a few calls, and the rest is history. But it's weird. Had I not developed this problem, and ironically, because the book I wrote, my first one, is about tales of drunken debauchery sourced from all over the world through Reuters and American Press and Canadian Press and The Guardian and New York Times and all that kind of stuff. So a book about alcoholism run amok has its genesis from like a quasi-alcoholic period in my life. Mm-hmm. It's almost fitting. So it had that not happened. I was depressed. I was sitting at the end of the bar. And this is by myself, mind you. So there's a bar up the street from us called the Bovine Sex Club, which is not a sex club. It's in name only. It's a rock.
There's no cows on the premises neither.
No, it's could have been birthed out of a William S. Burroughs novel, because there's typewriters hanging from the ceiling, there's wire, there's these creepy dolls. It was at the time a biker hangout, so I'd see Hell's Angels there at times. It's a weird place.
It's a fun place.
It was a great, it's yeah. probably still is. Like Tommy Lee would hang out there. So you had all sorts of like people from rock and strippers and God knows what, mm-hmm. and it's a popular music venue. So yeah, during this time with a night job, I'd be there repeatedly by myself.
Think the last time that you and I both went to the Bovine together, we were there to go see Ramones cover band. Do you remember that? They were wearing the wigs, they were kick-ass, and I was there, and then you showed up, and I think that was, God, maybe like a dozen years ago.
Like, I've seen things at that place that, of course, it's since cleaned up its act.
And he's done and, things. Listen,
come on. Yeah, and they shall be forever remain, you know, the stuff of lore.
Or should we use the passive and say things were done to him?
The Bovine Sex Club, if you're ever in Toronto, is an amazing fucking place. So,
if you're ever in Toronto, you're one of our faithful listeners, give us an email. We'll take you to the Bovine.
Yeah, and drinks will be on you, of course, right? Because that's the theme of this movie.
You've got to pay for some of your entertainment somehow. Right?
Oh, well.
If you're not buying our book, then fucking buy some drinks, you know?
And as one of the characters, Lily, who sits at the end of the bar, says, yeah, the first time that you bought a drink was your last. That you bought someone else a drink was your last. So many, many different fun lines. Henry Shinasky.
It reminds me of a friend of ours. Okay, I'm not going to say who the name.
No.
But yeah.
And I don't know if you were one to darken the door of a bar by yourself. This was a thing
I've done it. I've done it. Yeah.
And it's
not as much as you, but I've done it.
Well, it just stemmed from like sheer boredom and night jobs where mm-hmm. you just go and just grab a pint and then.
Did you ever go to Mike's by yourself? That's something I...
Mike's? Like Mike's Tavern?
Yeah.
Like up the street here?
Yeah, well, it's no longer there.
No.
I did.
Ugh. Because there's a certain type, and there's a certain type of saloon tavern depicted mm-hmm. in Barfly. And it's a disappearing type of establishment where you can still get bottles and pints for like $3. Mm-hmm. And where, and this is awful to say... where you would get like scooters pull up, so you'd have people on disability mm-hmm. when their welfare checks would come in.
That checked out in the bar, and yeah.
Hey, God love them. Like, if you were disabled and couldn't work, fuck, what else are you going to do with your time? And
these kind of places need to exist, okay?
They really do, yeah.
I'm sorry, but like, this is probably happening in every major American city, Canadian city, what have you. Gentrification, I mean, the reality is, fine. Mike's became a grassroots pub and whatever the fuck bullshit, but like these places, these people who are the fringes of society, they need
a place to socialize.
To socialize. If you're not drinking, they just need to socialize. They need a place where everybody knows their name. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what Mike's was and what other sort of bars that are long gone and late and lamented. And frankly, there's a really good song by The Replacements called There Goes a Regular, which really does encapsulate the experience of going to one of those sort of bars.
And it's weird because inordinately, predominantly, nothing would happen. So when you'd go in search of adventure, like some sort of like dissolute Magellan on some Tuesday night, because I was always out on a Sunday or a Monday, nothing generally would happen. But the times that did happen made it so worthwhile because you'd meet all these people. This is, I'm talking about going solo. Like, I met some people again at the Bovine who decided they would go swimming at 4 a.m. at one of the local public city pools in Toronto. We thought, great idea, until one member of our party, and none of these people I knew, there's about six or seven of us, we hopped the fence to go swimming in this pool. We're all drunk as a lord. One member of our party cut her hand on top of the fence, and we ended up sitting in the ER at Toronto Western for several hours while she got tended to with like stitches, and we couldn't look at her hand as it was so gross. So this was a good idea at the time, and this was the idea that was hatched at said establishment, the Bovine. So, but for all the times that happened, for all the times the Hell's Angels were hanging out, for all the times you'd get laid or someone would like end up naked on stage at some ridiculous tavern, most of the time it was just me sitting there by myself, just palming a pint and nothing happening. And certainly not Faye Dunaway showing up with these gams from here till next Tuesday at the end of the bar, crossing her legs. But it's funny because you would think such a woman like that would not show up at a place like this. But I've seen that. I've seen alcoholics show up at my local sports bar by themselves, women in their 40s, and there's something very odd about it. And there's like, you can get away with it when you've got this insouciance and this whatever, this youthful exuberance, I can go and I can read my book at the end of the bar. But there's a time limit to that. When you're 40 and 50 and you're being entertained by the bartender because you're sitting there and you need someone to talk to for lack of any other social interaction, there's something kind of sad about that. And there's a sadness that pervades this movie. So as much as Henry Chinaski hooks up with this Wanda character, played by Faye Dunaway, this union of like-minded souls is not going to last. And the only thing they really have in common is that they're both problem drinkers.
Exactly.
And she bankrolls him because she's a kept woman. Sugar daddy would be common parlance. So she has this character named Wilbur, whose credit card she has, and she buys all her stuff at his expense, and yet she shacks up with everyone. She shacks up with Frank Stallone's Eddie bartender. She shacks up with Henry Chinaski.
Just a piece of meat. Just a piece of meat, man.
Just a piece of meat. And she has hooked up with a bunch of people, but really what puts the two of them together is their love of
their
drink.
Love
and
of the drink.
And it's kind of, it's depressing,
it's
but
depressing.
It's very,
very true to life.
It is true to life, but what could they pot, like, they don't have anything in common beyond that.
Well, I mean, look, I mean,
he's a good-looking guy, she's a good-looking woman.
You know, like, I'm thinking, like, you know, Sid and Nancy, Gary Oldman, what have you, and, you know, I mean, what did him and Nancy have in common other than their shared love of the needle, you know what I mean?
Ooh, I'm not sure.
And so they found themselves shacked up in the Kelsey Hotel when Sid took a fatal shot, and that was the end of that. So yeah, I mean, a lot of these relationships that we romanticize, because let's be real here. People find, like, people take that Sid and Nancy thing and be like, oh, it's so wonderful, it's so beautiful. They were too young and in love with this world, and blah blah blah. Like, people romanticize addiction, and so as much as being addicted to any substance is a hellish existence, there's nothing romantic about it, my friend.
No.
Nothing romantic about it. But, and a lot of these movies, they do show, like, the morning after and how goddamn terrible it is, you know, waking up like, what the fuck did I do last night? Who's beside me? If you've had mornings like that, I'm sure, and I have had too.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And your head is pounding and you feel like,
you know. Well, would you take them back? Because, like, my days of inebriation and debauchery are in the rearview mirror. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was thinking one morning I woke up on my front porch because some cyclists were going by, and it was probably 7 in the morning. it's fun to chalk that up to just youthful indiscretion.
So you just lay down and
I got to home from the bar at 4, passed out because I had a cigarette or whatever, and then was looking at these cyclists sideways while I was lying, you know, on the front porch face down, and they were going by, you know, with their silly Lance Armstrong spandex.
Okay, I'll do you one better, man. I once woke up on my front lawn in nothing but my underwear.
Is this your mom's place?
Yeah.
Oh, good God. Oh, my God.
Yeah, because what happened was a night of drinking downtown, right? And I used to live up in the burbs. So after that, after a night of heavy, heavy drinking, I got off the final bus that would take me to my, where at that point I would then start to walk about 10 minutes and then be home. As I'm walking, I'm so fucking loaded. I'm so in the bag that I felt too constricted in my own clothes. So I started, like, just doffing. First it was a belt, and then it was, like, you know, a shirt. And then it was
so, like, your own burlesque routine.
You got it, man. By the time I got, it was, like, 4:30 in the morning. By the time I got to my premises, I was completely naked, save for whatever undergarments I was wearing. I was holding my clothes, so I didn't just doff it along the way.
Okay.
And, yeah, I just passed on out and woke up maybe 3 hours later, like, birds were chirping, sun was shining, weather was sweet, and I felt like absolute garbage. So yeah.
Jesus Christ. Well, it's interesting. Yeah, you mentioned Norman Mailer. I mean, there's that two-fisted macho drunk is dead to the ages, it's and probably with good riddance. Yeah. Frankly, I mean, whether it be Hemingway and all these guys, I don't know. There's no way to romanticize this kind of very damaging lifestyle. You can chalk it up to youthful exuberance, but there's a time after which it should be in the past. Yeah, and these characters are too far gone to be doing this. And that's what's very sad.
Would you take those days back?
No.
Absolutely not.
But if those days stayed with you right now, then there's something very sad about that. Right. So
I'm glad for having gone through them because they were fun. In retrospect, you know what I mean? Like, I came through with everything intact, where some other people didn't, right?
No, it's true. You have these kind of old man bars, a place where people go to die, and there's one in every neighborhood. My local bar has a bronze plaque for this one dude who used to have a history in the music business. He was a touring musician, whatever. He has his own bar plaque and seat, and if you should be sitting there and he comes by, you have to vacate it. And I'm thinking,
of course you do.
Like, is that, there's something, either is that laudable or is that sad? A little bit of both?
I would say it's a little bit of both, but more so sad than laudable. What's the name of this musician? Are you able to
rather not say, no? but he has some great stories about touring with the Allman Brothers, and it's pretty great. So I mean, I'm almost like, I want to give a shout out to this bar because you could hang out with the guy and chat with them. Yeah. Yes, it's named after a weather pattern.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that this is a movie with this really bereft of plot, other than the fact that this guy's a budding novelist, budding poet, and hooks up with this fellow alcoholic. And the one of the funniest scenes is when a publisher sees such incredible talent that they hire a PI to track him down, so they can sign him up for a book deal. Now, you haven't been through the ringer like I have in the publishing world. You have a small taste of it with our Death by Umbrella book.
Well,
but there's no way.
I had an agent very briefly, and that was with you, along with you, and that was somewhat...
I've got it like 10 plus years in this business.
I know.
There is no way on God's green earth that a publisher would hire anyone to find talent. It's supply and demand. There's an endless supply of people who think their scribblings are so wonderful that they will...
They think they're the next Bukowski, basically.
Yeah, they will write for free novels, the great American novel, a great nonfiction work. They will work on it and it's to its completion and send it off for free to any publisher. It's been this way for years.
Walk a half a block, go into a Starbucks right now as we speak, and you're going to find 20 people right now with their freaking laptops out trying to write the great, I guess, Canadian novel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's no way.
They have no clue.
Even when I had my first deal, I paid for my own headshots. So there's no way they are paying to track some nascent, budding talent. Interchangeable, replaceable. There's thousands of people like him. They can just move on to somebody else. But it's pretty funny that was the major... like plot point, but I guess like you write what you know anyone but Bukowski, especially because his plots seldom deviated from being a postal worker or being a writer and being a drinker.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that there's nothing really that Henry Chinaski has to offer other than not being able to hold down a job and romanticizing what it means to be just a booze hound. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And then you have this fun, it's just essentially epigrammatic, episodic, Trojan horse means of throwing in funny lines. And that's it.
Cool brawls outside.
Yes.
You know,
so outside Eddie, played by
everybody's favorite Salonia, right? Frankie.
Yeah, he plays Eddie, the quintessential thug asshole bartender. And he's just a square-jawed lunkhead. And at one point, Henry Chinaski decries his obviousness and his fake masculinity and his over-the-top womanizing and all this because he's got like the shortcut t-shirt and the, you know, the flipped up collar, and he's just this macho a-hole. And the fights between them are hilarious because they make no sense, and yet this is like a very low level, I don't know, a hero's journey that Henry has, where he wants to best this guy in fisticuffs. Mm-hmm. And says the only way he can do so, because he's basically a drunk, is through fuel. And he says I can take Eddie. All
Street
I need
smart.
Is fuel.
Street Smart. Sorry, dude, for interrupting. That was another film that Cannon put out in the mid-80s that gave the world, because he was acting
the world.
He was acting beforehand, but no one ever took notice. Morgan Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
Street Smart. He acted opposite Christopher Reeve. And good movie. I've seen it. Morgan Freeman was nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and that was the very first time I ever heard of Morgan Freeman. Sorry for interrupting you.
Continue. Oh, wow.
What you're saying.
Oh, no. Just saying, like, part of the comedy derives from fat bar drunk at the end of the bar who's eating some sort of hoagie or something, and Henry just snatches it right out of his mouth and shoves it down his gullet, and then says, okay, now I've got, like, the calories needed to take Eddie, and then calls out Eddie. They go into the back alley and throw down. And everyone in the bar watches entertainment for these degenerates who are hanging out here, including the aforementioned Lily, she is just an amazing, just again, a bar fly, just sits at the end of the bar and just calls out Henry. And maybe has 30 lines in the whole movie, but it's just so funny. And it turns out, spoiler alert, that Eddie has shacked up with Wanda, which causes further strife between Henry and Eddie. So as if he didn't have a reason to beat this guy's ass before, then he has a vested interest now because they have a woman in common. So there's really, this is very threadbare in terms of plot. It's all an excuse to insert a bunch of, what do you want to call it, booze hound barroom witticisms of Bukowski, who wrote the screenplay.
Booze hound barroom bonhomie.
Barroom bonhomie. And there's really, I mean, who needs more? Because if you have something to say that's funny and amusing, you could have any vehicle to pass that along. Mm-hmm. You know, my dinner with Andre or whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. So you have a couple scenes that could have been further developed where Wanda and Henry go and steal corn from the side of the road. And they go up into the rows and almost into the rows. That's like Children of the Corn almost. They go up and she stuffs a bunch of ears into her purse, and Henry says, like, those aren't even like ripe, you can't do anything with that. And she doesn't care, like, she thinks she can eat them and stuffs them into her purse. And it just shows, for all her class, for all, like, however debonair she appears, the fact that her gams and her pegs, as they call them in Australia, her legs, they go on forever. Like, she's a gorgeous woman. Like, she's still,
got those legs and she knows how to use them.
She does. Despite how put together she is, nice hair, nice outfits, she's still, at the end of the day, just a sad barfly, just like him. And that's how they connect.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the point where we get to what we've learned?
Well, it's the point where we get to what you learned. So,
oh,
yeah,
my God. Well,
let's do it,
it's interesting because while gentrification has occurred, and this movie is a testament to some of those locales where it's maybe not taken hold. And this is a part of LA that we've seen time and time again. This is Skid Row, where you have taverns, where they have the fluorescent martini glass sign in the window. Yeah, and it's funny, and these places would have like pool tables and a jukebox and that's it, but like they're way more enjoyable than gastropub or whatever it's like supplanted it, which sounds like some medical specialty, you know, like an endocrinologist or whatever. I did my residency or in gastropub.
I'm going in for a gastropub tomorrow, man. I'm totally dreading it, man. But oh, man.
Oh my God. I hope
they put me under for the gastropub.
And it's funny because like I enjoy those establishments, but they're a different setting altogether. Like you go for dinner. You don't go to commiserate and catch up with friends over pints. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different experience. You go for the food, and then the fact that they have good beer is an afterthought. You want to go for the fact that they don't have good beer and that they have these tiny draft glasses that are like tapered and like get bigger, like, and they're only probably like, I don't even know, like a third of a pint. And these dive places always have those, and they're always very poorly washed because their dishwasher's not working, whether it's like an actual motorized physical dishwasher or an actual person. But they always have like the glass, and it's like a little dirty, and you get them for $1.50 or $2. And there's a certain appeal to that. I mean, again, we've been poor, and when you don't have the means, you need a place where you can be social and you can be somewhere where you can drink. And this is an establishment that's being lost. This type of establishment is biting the dust. Probably the places depicted on film here are few and far between, as are the places here, because everything is turning into some sort of, again, like experiential place to get some kind of tapas fucking fare. When in reality, all you want is a nice pint with friends.
To me, the synonym for tapas is still hungry.
Yeah, it's amen.
Still hungry, and yet I have no money left to buy anything else for food.
You just spent about $100 for like 3 bites, but anyway.
Well, can you cast your mind 15 years back to when you first saw this movie to conjure up anything you learned? Because if not, it's not a big deal.
I dug it. I mean, I watched it with the ex. You know, she didn't like it at all. She really, really hated it. I picked up on some of the lines that Mickey would say, Henry, to my friends. I mean,
To my friends. I feel sorry for people who don't go mad or whatever, you know? I tormented her for what terrible years. Lives they must lead.
And that was the thing. Not only did I torment her, but when Chris would come over, I'd be like, hey, Chris, do your Henry Chernowski for Tony. And then, you know?
My friends.
Yeah. My friend is here. He's going to do Henry for you, you know? No, it was a good movie. I dug it quite a bit. And it's the only thing I'm going to say is that there's more to canon than meets the eye.
Obviously, oh, for sure. Yeah. And it's left like, you know, quite an incredible legacy. It's pretty funny because it happens so rarely, but it happens so often in this movie.
Runaway Train was another canon film that was of quite...
Oh, with John Voight.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's a great movie. Mm. We should podcast that sometime.
Yeah, one day we will, yeah.
Yeah, it's a terrible song from the 90s, but, you know. On a ticket to on a runaway train. Dun-dun-dun, laughing in the rain. But it's funny that no one buys a bunch of strangers' rounds. I don't know whether it's just like the rummy set in this movie or just way more inebriated and sociable, but it just never, like... It never happens where a bunch of people meet at a certain place and they're having such a good time that they buy rounds for one another. I mean, maybe it does in Wolf of Wall Street. I don't know. It's happened to me. I can count them on one hand.
Yeah, exactly.
For the hundreds of bars I've like hung out in my life. So kudos to these guys for fashioning their own kind of, I don't know, social club out of nothing. And it makes you realize that the people who have the least need socializing the most. So,
and oftentimes the people that have the least also have the most to give, in the sense that whatever they have, they will give freely.
So, yeah, as this movie shows, when Chinaski actually does get a book deal, he just uses and it just speaks to, you know, his lack of future planning and lack of foresight and whatever. He just spends the bulk of it just buying rounds for everyone. And really, you know, why not?
Well, I mean, look, what was written on Charles Bukowski's tombstone? Don't try.
Okay? Oh, wow.
And
well, I remember the beginning of Women, which is, I believe, it began as a mistake, which is one of the great lead sentences of any novel I've ever read. So
Don't try. I didn't try at all for
this. Sorry, Homer Simpson. Yeah, don't, yeah.
I didn't try at all for this podcast because I didn't watch it. So this is a nice little bit of respite for me, or should I say respite? This is a little debate, or should I say debate that we had about.
Oh my God.
It's a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, well, this is a very impromptu. I mean, this is akin to just calling up a friend for a pint, an impromptu pint on a Thursday. Yeah. So this is as ill-prepared as we've ever been, and for any podcast, that's fair to say, but they are indeed. Yeah. And we thought, okay, let's give this one a whirl, but we felt this was in the spirit of a movie that's really about, you know, spirits. There you go. As I turn a phrase, we bring this podcast to an end with our star rating.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfair for me to give it a star rating because of the fact that it's been so long, but I will say that I enjoy if I were to watch it in preparation for this podcast, which I should have done, but I watched another film that will be...
It's coming.
I'd probably give it about 3.5 stars from my recollection, yeah. Maybe okay. It would have been increased.
Uh-huh. Through the, you know, the glass eye of retrospection and, you know, casting your mind's eye back. I'm going to give this... Well, it really depends as you age, too. And you look back... with the glint of nostalgia.
The first time you watched this movie, you must have been like way into like the lives of Henry and Wanda. You must have been like, wow, I love this. I love these people.
Indeed,
I want to live like them, right?
But really, yeah.
Now you're watching going, bit of a
cautionary
tale.
By the grace of God, go I.
Yeah.
Still, I'm going to say, like, there's enough just delectable, delightful, like epigrammatic, just zingers. And that alone is enough to keep things, the momentum going. And there's a wonderful little scene, too, where they're fleeing from the cops against this one could call it corny cob heist that they had earlier. And they bust into Wanda's place. They close the elevator. They flee and just manage to get inside their apartment door on time. And then they close it, lock it, and say, you know, all right, be quiet for the next couple hours till the cops like go about their business, which is funny as well because the cops are chasing a bunch of corn thieves from who are trespassing. It's like, and they have nothing better to do in LA with all this gangland whatever activity there, but I thought that was very funny. And then they're like, shh, don't move, don't say anything. And then the cops finally leave. Henry hangs out for the night, and just a funny little vignettes. I hasten to guess what this film would be like to anyone who's on the wagon or anyone who's like a teetotaler. That would really be something. I think this movie demands that you be a drinker. I mean, what else can you say? Like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Could you watch that movie straight? No. You have to have some experience popping pills, doing blow. There's just no way. And that speaks, I guess, to its artistic limitations in some respects. Yeah, but there's enough funny lines that you hopefully would be able to get into the headspace of someone who's so far gone like these characters are. 4 star for me after that rather long-winded explanation. And hopefully you'll enjoy our 4-star podcast. We're going to wrap things up here and grab some fuel, some dinner.
I need some fuel.
Yeah, I really need some more than what we've been fueled by up until this point. Send us your suggestions for movies to podcast, reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com. And we'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.